Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us today, both myself and my co-host here. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And whether you have advisors you work with now, we want you to consider us your advisors. And you turned your mic from on to off after 22 years of doing this.
I know. I was moving around, and I didn't want that background noise. But call us. Ask us questions. Anything financial.
Yeah, I'd love to take your call. To join us, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And love to take your call. And as many of you listen through, I think we have more podcast listeners today than we have people listening on the weekends. And furthermore, most of these calls we record during the week.
If we
schedule
can.
Schedule a time.
If it's convenient for the callers.
Yeah. So just because you maybe listen to it via podcast or you're driving right now, give
us a call.
Just call
the number.
And we will schedule a time to answer your question.
But they are
your advisor.
But all the calls are unrehearsed, and we don't really know the subject matter.
That's correct. You know, it's funny. Someone asked me, Scott, don't you ever get stumped? And I've said, the times we've been stumped are usually some strange esoteric thing that applies to one in 100 people,
that you'd have to look up the code for anyway. And since it's a radio show, we don't have time to look up the code.
Well, it's not exactly fun radio. Hold on, please.
Well, I look up this tax code.
Nor do you find us crunching a lot of numbers typically on the show, just because that doesn't make for exciting radio.
But most of financial planning is concept-driven anyway. Understand the concept and whether it applies to you and then do the numbers. That's actually how it works.
What are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah. What are things
structured like right now?
And what's the goal? And then apply the numbers.
That's what a good financial advisor would do anyway.
You would hope.
One would hope. 1-888-2-HANSON's the number. Let's go to the phones. We're in Folsom, California, talking with Richard. Richard, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes. Hi, guys. Thank you so much.
Hi, Richard.
I hope that my question won't stump you, but here goes. I'd like to know if you think I was misled by an advisor or not.
Okay.
And there are two parts to this. I'm invested in an Oppenheimer Mutual Fund of California Municipal Bonds. Oppenheimer said that my net dividend was 3.7%. This was a few weeks ago. And in doing the math, that's what I see as well. However, my financial advisor on that account said I was really receiving the SEC 2.54% yield. He said, and I quote, "The internal expenses of a mutual fund are not billed to you directly, but are paid for by reducing the returns you would have received." He then said, "Therefore, the 3.7% yield deposited in my checking account is really my gross yield." And that's when he sent a fact sheet showing the SEC 2.54%, saying that was my actual net yield.
Well, they gave you the money, did they not?
That is real money in my checking account, and if I do the math, that's what
I get.
What's
the SEC yield? It's funny. I've been doing this. I've been listening to this so long. I've been trying to remember the difference between the SEC yield. I mean, sometimes there's a periodic dividend or a capital gain distribution that can change.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, the SEC yield is not one of the criteria that we look at as a firm when we dig deep into a bond fund before we use a bond fund.
And does this mutual fund have an A, B, or C behind it?
I have A shares.
Okay.
So you paid, at some point in time, you paid a sales load going into this.
Up front.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
And now that you own the fund.
That doesn't matter. That's behind us.
Yeah. So sometimes you hear people say, I've heard actually on radio shows, people say, well, get rid of it. It's a loaded mutual fund. But I'm thinking, well, if you've already paid, you paid the load when you bought the fund years ago.
That damage is, it's done.
So you
right.
might.
Yeah. But the answer to your question is, if you received 3.7%, as long as it was all a dividend distribution, then that's the return. I don't know where he got the 2.54%.
That's not that. There's no way the internal costs are over 1% on this fund.
Well, that'd be on a quarterly basis too, because it was 1.16 on 1 quarter's payment. It wasn't an annualized number, correct? Or are we talking annualized?
The SEC yields an annualized
annual.
Number.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
that kind of leads us. I'm sorry. Go
okay.
Ahead.
So what was the second question?
Well, that leads us into the other part. At the time, he was recommending I sell my fund and buy another company's separately managed account of slightly higher.
When did he sell you this fund?
He didn't. I bought this through his predecessor. This current advisor purchased that guy's business.
So,
and this was about 10 years ago.
So he wants you to put this money in a separately managed account, an SMA.
We're gonna open the hood and give you a little background into our industry here,
which won't be 100% pretty.
No, because our industry is not. So, years ago, most brokers and financial advisors earned their compensation through commissions. By selling financial products, either by trading stocks or trading bonds or selling bonds from their company they worked for that did the underwriting, so they had an inventory, they'd sell the bonds, make a spread there, they'd make a commission, all based on transactions. And most mutual funds years ago, and Matt, in full disclosure, I started in the industry in 1990. When I started in the industry, that's how the industry
that's
was.
That's what
it was. It was commission-based, right? So you would sell someone it was a transaction. The industry has shifted dramatically. To today, there's many independent advisory firms like our firm is, Hanson McLean. And then there are even the large firms, they encourage their advisors to go to a more of a platform where rather than being based on transactions, a client pays a fee, typically a quarterly fee. Oftentimes it's based upon the size of the account. And the theory behind that is that it aligns an advisor's interest more closely with a client, and the advisor is only going to make recommendations to buy or sell when the advisor thinks that it's in the client's best interest. All right? So you with us so far?
Right. Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So
you paid a commission up front up to 5.75%.
10 years ago.
Right. But that damage is done. So if you look at the internal
But here's what's going on now. So now you were this account was assigned to a newer advisor,
or you said that your old advisor sold his business to someone else.
Exactly. Yes.
And so now you've got what they would consider an unproductive asset. Unproductive doesn't mean it's unproductive to you; it's just unproductive to the firm that is managing the money. And it's not 100% unproductive because it probably pays a quarter of a percent trail
or 0.15 or maybe less. Some sort of a little
trail every year to the advisor that is overseeing it. So does it make sense to move to the separately managed account?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't.
Maybe. Maybe not. So how much money is this approximately?
A dollar figure?
Yeah.
The fund has about $147,000 in it, net asset value. And I should tell you here that a separately managed account was paying 2.7%. And then when I told him my Oppenheimer was paying 3.7%, that's when he started with telling me that I wasn't really paying, he wasn't really getting that.
So. All right. So here's the deal. You got in an old scheme, I'm going to call it a scheme, where you paid an upfront fee to buy into a certain management style. This wrap account, separately managed account, you'll pay an ongoing, there's nothing to go into it, but you're going to pay an ongoing fee. So by its very nature, that new SMA is going to be more expensive. Now, whether or not it's more appropriate, it may be more appropriate than
I doubt it. I doubt it's more appropriate.
I kind of doubt it, too.
It's a muni bond fund. He's owned it for 10 years.
What percentage of this is your overall assets?
What percentage of your portfolio is this as a percentage?
I'd say probably 25%, maybe 20%.
And how's the rest managed?
It is in some of it in REITs, real estate investment trusts. Luckily, I got in early, so I'm still positive on that, on all of those. And those are in a Roth.
Okay.
And the other is in a 401k. I think half of that is a small business index fund.
Okay.
I think the remainder is probably we're holding a lot in cash, actually, which is probably a mistake. We keep waiting for the big downturn to happen. So that never seems to happen. So,
is your advisor doing any financial planning for you?
That's exactly where I was going.
No.
Okay.
No, he's strictly the advisor on record for this account.
I wouldn't do any transactions.
Who sold you the non-traded real estate investment trust?
No one. I did that on my own.
Was it non-traded or are they publicly traded?
They're publicly traded.
Okay. Good. So we were both nervous that this guy sold us a bunch of junk.
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do a thing.
Not with this guy. You don't have a relationship with him. Yeah. He hasn't done any financial planning.
He's not adding a lot of value.
If you think that you would benefit from doing some comprehensive planning to see how it all works in and when to get the cash invested and when to get what percentage is appropriate in California municipal bonds, I actually think that would probably be a worthwhile exercise for you to go through.
Yeah.
But his question, the original question was,
you're going to have a lower return by moving from this to the separately managed account.
Correct.
Right, especially when the expense fees are 50% higher.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, by its very nature, you will.
That's exactly
particularly
it.
In the bond market.
It's a muni bond market. There's only so much.
Yeah.
It's only in California. So appreciate the call.
Yeah, good luck to you, Richard. Yes. Appreciate the call.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Let's continue on.
Right.
1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to join the program. We're in Sacramento with Ann.
Hey there, Pat. Hey, Scott.
Hi, Ann.
I've got a question. My husband and I want to retire this coming June. And my husband will be 63 and I am 66.
Okay.
And I've been told that there is something called spousal benefits or restricted filing.
Yes.
Okay, because some people tell me I can't do it, where I could file under his benefits because his benefits are larger, and then I can file under mine when I turn 70. So I'm just trying to see if that's true.
So the idea being is that you go on his benefit until you reach your age 70, in which at that point in time, the concept being is that your benefit would continue to grow, and then you would drop his and go to yours, the higher part.
The challenge is, you can receive more off, maybe you can receive more off his benefit than yours, maybe not. He's not 66, you are 66. So
yes.
In the past, there was a kind of a technique you could use where you would file for your benefits and then suspend them, and then that would trigger a spousal benefit. But your spouse is not 66. And really the way, Ann, to try to determine how to maximize your benefits, because this is not uncommon at all, and regardless of someone's 66 today or 64 or whatever, it's that what's the best way for me to have my benefits? Do I file as a spousal benefit? Do I file for my own benefits? Do I wait until I'm age 70? Do I file immediately? And the only way to go through that is to really run the numbers a multiple different ways. And frankly, it's even more complicated than that because, for example, we do a Social Security workshop where we show that based upon we take the same exact finances and a couple has three different objectives. One is to leave as much to the heirs. One is to leave as little to the heirs
and have as much income.
I forget the third one. But all based on what their goals are, it triggered different claiming strategies.
But so this concept of file and suspend doesn't work for Ann.
Correct, because your husband's not 66.
Yeah, and the file and suspend, you have to be over what year?
You have to be 66 this year.
Yes.
Born before January of 51.
Yeah, I'll be 66 in June.
So if
he'll be 63 in 1 month in June. So we wanted to retire at the same time.
So
have you met with a financial good financial planner to look at your retirement? I mean, here you're a few months away.
Yeah, and someone's telling you you can and someone's telling you can't.
Okay, so my financial advisor told me I can. Social Security told me that that has been eliminated
I
went down to see them. So that's why I said, oh, my gosh, Social Security is telling me that I can't do it, and my financial advisor is telling me that I can.
Can
and
what?
I've asked him.
Do a file and suspend.
File and suspend.
Your financial advisor was right.
You can file and suspend, but you can't get a claim on your husband's benefit because he's 63.
So what's the point of filing and suspending?
Well, technically, I guess your advisor could have been correct, but there was no strategy behind it.
Yeah. So your advisor was right a few years ago. They changed this a few years ago. So a few years ago, you were right. In fact, I gave a Social Security workshop, I think 3 or 4 years ago, and explained all this thing. And then I said, look, this could change at any time. Anytime it could change. And the very next day, it changed.
The next day?
Yeah, it changed.
Yeah. It came out of the blue.
Yes. So that's just the nature of taxes and benefits.
Right.
The way to determine the best Social Security method is to run a lot of different strategies. To know exactly how to get the most benefit out of Social Security, you need to know the day you're going to die. And I think that's...
Well, that could change too.
but really, the best claiming strategy is one that corresponds with your other income sources. And your a good financial advisor should have a Social Security program that they can run alongside and run multiple different benefits and use that connection with the other benefits that you've got.
Yeah.
The other income sources you've got.
So
the
answer to your question after a bunch of words was Social Security Administration was right. It would add no benefit in doing the file and suspend. You could technically do it, but it wouldn't do anything for you.
All right. So another question then. So if I do file on my husband's, because he's the money maker in the family, and I used to make money, but now I'm just coasting.
Okay.
But we still both work. I mean, but I can there. Am I able to? Or maybe I should ask a different. Should we both file at the same time?
We don't file
at 63 in 1 month, and then me at 66.
And we have no. We have no answer to that because we don't know we would know if we sat down with you and tried to figure out your objectives, right?
And your other income sources and other assets.
Yeah, and then the taxation on it. So it's not that we don't know. We don't know enough about you to answer intelligently.
Yeah.
It's not that we couldn't answer it. You've got a financial advisor and you're calling these strangers on the air. Which is a little bit spooky.
You're not strangers. I just love listening to you. I've been to your workshops. I'm going to go to another workshop. I figure knowledge is
learning.
Power,
right?
Yeah. The more you understand, the better you'll be. And so we have a Social Security workshop, actually.
And frankly, there are many advisors who understand Social Security quite well and use Social Security software programs in connection with their retirement planning.
Yeah.
Programs.
But there is an answer for you based upon your objectives and what your other income sources are and your life expectancy, quite frankly. So one of the questions we like to ask is how old were your parents when they passed away? Are they still alive? Do you have any chronic health conditions that are going to shorten your life?
How many packs of cigarettes do you smoke a day?
Yeah,
you drink before noon.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the answer to the last two are no, no. But the other ones are questionable.
Yeah, so
I get it. I think my guy has run this program through. It's just like knowledge is power. So
yep,
I really love you guys.
Yeah, good.
And I just wanted to touch bases with you because he's put together this strategy based on, I think, all that information.
Oh.
I think I remember giving it to him. So I just, wanted to get
good.
A second opinion.
Yeah, well, it's always good. And like you said, Ann, knowledge is power. I mean, and greatly appreciate the call. And one of the reasons that we've done this program, Pat, for 20-some-odd years is because part of our core believes that a more educated individual or family, the more educated they are, the better choices they're going to make.
Oh, I've been doing it.
Not that they want to necessarily take full ownership and responsibility of the day-to-day management of their of their retirement plans and whatnot. But it's kind of like if I had a health issue, I'm suddenly going to want, I'm going to want to learn something about this.
Well, I've been doing it, Scott, quite frankly, is to get out of going to my children's sporting events on the weekends.
Yes. Oh, come on. That's the most fun part.
They are, actually. Yeah. They are. I joke.
Yeah.
I jest.
And let's go to San Luis Obispo. We're talking with Sarah. Sarah, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes. Good morning, Scott and Pat. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
So most recently, my husband and I, we did our taxes preliminary. We did a preliminary of it. We currently own two rentals. And doing the preliminary, it did not look good at all. And so I put it down and I wanted to do more research on the new tax laws and how it's going to affect us. And I thought I read somewhere when you're considered a small business that you would have more tax write-offs. So my question is this, if we purchase another investment property, will that help us for 2019 taxes?
Probably not.
It doesn't make you a small business.
Okay, what is considered a small business when...
Well, I mean, first of all, they have some favorable tax treatment, and it's between, I forget the exact income limits, 100 and 250,000. It's kind of a,
A window.
Then it pops back up, so you can kind of make some marginal tax rate worse.
And then it's in certain industries and not in others.
I see.
There's nothing you can do to restructure your existing holdings that's going to lower your income taxes. I had lunch with an accountant just this last week, CPA, at one of the major, there's only like three now, the top three or whatever, long-term partner. And we were talking about it. What he said to me is like, there's no deductions left. There's nothing left.
People.
Yeah. There's nothing you can do.
That's what I thought already. I think it has something to do with the salt, and I'm not quite sure exactly what that means. But
it just means it used to be that we can take all of our state income taxes and our property taxes and deduct them against our federal taxes, and now we're limited to $10,000. So those that had high state income taxes and high property taxes on their personal residences are the ones that got kind of hurt on this.
Yeah, but Scott, I would make an argument I hate to use the word fair, but that lower tax states were actually subsidizing states because of the deduction is the way it existed before. So if you were a fiscally responsible state, you were supporting non-fiscally responsible states that had
higher
tax.
Yeah, I totally understand that, yeah.
But because of the deduction. But in your particular situation...
How bad was your tax that bad between the 2 years? Your total, not what your refund was or what you owed, but the total tax bill?
Considering what it's been in the past, yes. $17,000.
Is your tax bill?
Yes, my tax bill.
And what was it the previous year?
About $6,000.
And are you both still employed?
We're both still employed.
When the tax law changed, did you have a much higher take-home income?
Yeah, did your deductions from your paycheck change so that your income was higher?
No, that didn't change at all. Nothing's changed. It's just what I do believe happened is our income was higher in 2018.
Got it.
Because I don't know without looking at your situation how much this tax change
would have affected
impacted you
that.
Or was other income.
So who did your tax returns and did you do them yourself?
Well, that's what happened is I did a preliminary. And so now I just put it down and now I'm going to seek some assistance.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Right. And I have them look through and say, can you please explain to me exactly where the increase came from?
Yep.
That's
worth doing it in order to make sure you did it correct. So,
right. And tax cut was not a tax cut for many.
Yep. It was cold.
And there's a lot of people in the states, high tax states like California and New York.
Actually, it was less than a tax cut. It was a
tax
increase.
Yeah.
Right. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
I appreciate
all right. Good luck, Sarah.
Have a good day.
And you know, Pat, when they were debating the that tax bill, I talked to my congressman, and I said, philosophically, I support the concept of the federal government not subsidizing states
that are fiscally irresponsible, as I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But
I said, I think you need to have some sort of phase in to allow the states to slowly, you know, adapt?
Uh-huh, because they will. 100%, Scott. That phase in, they would change everything.
Well, give
doing.
Me a chance to leave.
Right, yeah, right.
I'm not leaving anywhere. But
and your congressman said?
He actually voted against it. It was went through the, they voted on it twice. The first time he voted against it.
And then?
You know how the political parties work, like, right?
Come along here, son.
You know how the political parties work.
Yeah, he had to vote against it the first time.
Which is, part of the reason we're so polarized today. There's like, you either vote party line or you're lame. You're
pushed
you're
out.
Done.
And yeah. You're working out of your Volvo in the parking lot of the Capitol.
You have no committee. You get nothing. No money. Yeah. You don't even say good
you're
morning to
shunned.
You.
You're shunned.
It's kind of what happens. Strange. Anyway, I don't want to talk politics.
Because we don't hear enough of that on the radio.
<That's>
Not
right.
Enough politics.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McClain's Money Matters? Visit hansonmcclain.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McClain.
Oh, by the way, Hanson McClain has been our name since Scott Hanson and Pat McClain, the two of us, started the organization some 25 years ago. Okay?
Yep.
We are in the process of going through a rebrand.
Changing our name
to Allworth Financial.
Why?
Because we want to make life confusing for us and for all of our clients. I apologize. I know it's a bit of a messy process. And when I first told my wife we're changing our name, she's like, why would you want to do that? You have such a great brand and you guys have been working this for so long and you've got a large organization now. And we're not changing the name for 2019.
We're changing the name forever.
It's really for what we think is going to be the best for attracting great talent, attracting great clients, keeping great talent, both for today and the years to come.
And the word Allworth better represents what we do.
Correct, as opposed to Hanson McClain, which could be...
And
we have offices outside of Northern California, which is where we started, where we're known. But
we now offer tax services, and we're building a suite of services to help our clients understand and manage their overall comprehensive wealth.
Yeah.
Allworth. I like it. And the best part about it?
What's that?
All those signs that say Hanson McClain, my sons have said, hey, Dad, those things in your lobby that say McClain, can I take that?
First, like college dorm room, a little McClain.
Yeah.
Lit up.
Or the
neon
ones on the side of the building.
So anyway, the firm's not changing at all. Both myself and Pat McClain here, we're our co-CEOs. We're going to remain as co-CEOs, leading the organization. The people are still the people. And
Service is still the service we have strived from the very beginning, which is to serve the client. The only reason we're in existence is our clients let us be in existence, and we never forget that. We're not here for us. We're here because you allow us to be here.
Not only that, if you notice on the radio program we've done for years, someone calls in, we're not like, well, call our office first thing tomorrow.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
I was talking to it. I had.
That's crass.
I had. I write for Investment News biweekly. I write a column
for
Investment
Industry.
News. It's for the industry. And I was having breakfast with their editor, a few weeks back, and I was talking to him. I told him I wrote a weekly column for the Sacramento Bee for 9 years. And I said, in those 9 years, not once did I ever reach out to whoever wrote me a note to try to solicit them as a client. And he was like surprised by that. I'm like, That's just not how. So, look, the same thing with this radio program.
We're not.
You contact us with a question. We're not going to be certain, like, oh, now
yeah,
you're
yeah, but if you want to come and
prospect
see
sort.
One of our advisors in our office, we would welcome and appreciate that.
There's no question about that. And to your point, it's our clients that enable us to remain in business.
So,
and unfortunately, it's the radio stations that and the podcast distributors, I guess, that allow us to
continue. Our new name will be Allworth.
Yes.
And Allworth.
We're cutting over at the end of April.
Yes.
So we're in the process of...
And I've had mixed results. I've had mixed results from people's opinion. I had some people tell me it was absolutely brilliant, and I had another investment advisor told me that it was the dumbest thing we could ever do.
I've had the same thing. I guess time will tell.
Yeah.
Well, who knows?
It'll be all right.
The people aren't changing.
It happens
all the time
in businesses. All the time. All the time.
Businesses change?
Yeah.
At least if we have all in our name... We don't have to worry about that.
But GE?
What about GE?
It used to be General Electric, right? How many different brands have rolled into GE and changed their names to GE? Or how many times have companies just completely out of thin air?
Well, our industry, frankly.
Lutheran Brotherhood is now Thrivent.
Our industry, I mean, you think back to some of the names.
Oh, yeah.
E.F. Hutton.
Mm-hmm. Dean Witter.
All these, I mean, the firms didn't, they're still around. Yeah, they merged in with others and morphed in time. Anyway,
so
enough about us. Let's hear about you.
What do you think about us?
Even
there
better.
There we go.
1-888.
Scott. It's a dad joke.
We've been I'm a dad.
Okay.
What kind of humor should I have? I take this as a compliment. Because you say I have high school humor.
That would be insulting. You do have a little bit of high school humor in you. Every guy does.
Some of my jokes I still remember
actually,
from junior high and high school.
If you get around your high school friends for any period of time, you will revert.
I do an annual ski trip with guys, and sometimes I do some cycling trips. And if it's all guys, it goes back to high school. It's ridiculous.
It's fast.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to be part of our program.
And this is a financial talk show if you have any questions.
Yeah, that's right. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. We're talking with Lee in Torrance. Lee, you're with Hanson McLean.
How are you guys today?
Lee, I don't know if you knew this, but I attended South Torrance High School.
And?
A very good high school.
And he graduated.
Oh, that's even more amazing.
It was the best 5 years of my life. It really was.
Yes.
No.
So what can we do for you, Lee?
I know Torrance well.
So my question today, I have a public safety retirement from PERS. It's a disability retirement.
Okay.
I'm also divorced.
Okay.
And my ex-wife is coming up on her 62nd birthday, will be eligible for Social Security. So I'm wondering if I will be able to collect half of her Social Security, even though I'm getting a pension from PERS.
Were you married at least 10 years?
I was married 21 years.
And weren't remarried?
No.
And how long ago was the did you divorce?
We've been divorced now 13 years.
You might... Did you?
Well, if you didn't have the PERS retirement, there's no question you'd be entitled, and it wouldn't if she took it. If you, how old are you today?
I'm 63.
Okay, so if you took it early before your full retirement age, you would have a reduction on that. But the truth is, you can qualify. It's either the greater of your benefit or 50% of your previous spouse's benefit. So if your benefit's $100 a month, and through hers it would have been $800, you pop up to the $800. But you still have the windfall elimination provision. I know it's not a windfall, but because you have a PERS disability pension.
So Scott,
even though it's a disability pension.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter why the pension's paid. It doesn't.
You did not pay
on my gross pay from PERS or my taxable income.
Gross. But you're going to need to go through and apply and go through that process first.
Yes, to figure out how much it is. Did you ever pay into Social Security?
Yes.
And how long
did I did not get I did not get 40 quarters. I'm 8 quarters short.
Okay.
Okay. Our experience in doing this for a long time is the only way to get accurate numbers
is to do it.
The numbers.
So people come into our office all the time, and your situation is so unusual, we can't not go to a calculator and figure it out. Right? Because we have all kinds of Social Security calculators and estimators that would help us, but the windfall elimination provision and the fact that it's your ex-wife's Social Security benefit.
Once she files, then you should go file and see what happens.
Do I have to wait for her to file?
You would. I would assume you would, because
If you were married, you'd have to. So our assumption would be that
I'm never going to know when she files.
Oh, go ahead and file.
Because I paid her a lot of money not to have to talk to her again.
Okay. Maybe she's telling her friends that it had to take a lot of money for
to make me go away. Sure.
So I don't know if the Social Security Administration could actually alert you when she files. I don't know the answer to that, but I would go in there with a divorce decree. And sit down with a counselor at Social Security Administration and apply, and they'll tell you right there, if they can, whether she's receiving it or not.
Okay. And on another related subject, my girlfriend is turning 62 soon.
Okay.
So she was going to file early.
Okay.
Now she's a substitute teacher, but she may be getting a job. She'll be eligible in June. And she may be getting a job in September. She's not sure yet.
She should wait.
Job. Yeah, definitely wait.
Wait.
No more putting it in abeyance and resetting the clock on that.
File and suspend.
Well, if you take it and you end up going back to work full time, and you're only allowed to earn about $14,000 or $15,000 a year before you begin losing your benefits, and you don't really lose your benefits forever. What ends up happening is you'll end up. On that portion, maybe it's all or some portion, you'll suspend that portion. And when you quit working, you'll begin receiving benefits at that higher level. So let's assume that you took it at age 62 and you're receiving, 72% of your normal benefit. And then you immediately got a full-time job where you had to pay the money back, which is what happens. You got to pay the money back. And then a year later, you decide to fully quit again. You would start receiving it, but it wouldn't be at the 72%. It would bump up to 78% or whatever the amount would be at that time. So it's not really lost forever, but it gets. But the challenge is, you sometimes got to pay it back. It's just.
But you're only talking about a few months here. You said right. She's eligible in June. She'll know about a job in September, right? Is that what you said?
Right.
Yeah.
And if she's thinking of working, unless she's got, tons of money aside.
She was going to file for her ex-husband. Not hers.
Okay,
Still wait.
Yeah.
Only that, she still might want to wait beyond age 62, yeah. Unless she's got a lot of money set aside.
Does she have a lot of money set aside? Is that what attracted you to her, Lee?
She's got me set aside. She was going to take the extra money, and we're going to pay off the house early.
I'd wait. I'd most certainly wait until after September.
No question, but maybe
that's even but even longer, I would consider waiting.
Yeah, and the reason is Social Security is a large percentage of income for many retirees. Matter of fact, for the majority of retirees.
So if you need the money.
It's a majority of their retirement income.
If you need the money, then you should probably wait.
Yes, as long as possible.
If you don't need them, you listen to our show, don't you?
You and Dave Ramsey.
Oh, and you know what's interesting? Thanks for the call, Lee. Appreciate the call. But what's interesting is there's a lot of speculation that there's going to be a hot button topic in the 2020 election.
Social Security. Think?
There's a lot of speculation around that.
I don't know. It's a third rail. Everyone's afraid to touch it.
Yeah, but they're touching the federal pension plans right now.
But I tell you what, you listen right now. So let's say you're at retirement age. And let's say you've done a good job and you've got $4 million set aside for retirement. Okay?
Which would be an extremely good job.
But
there's, saving.
God, there's thousands of people like...
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe millions like that across the country.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that have... middle-class millionaires, right? They're not.
Yeah,
they don't
heart
have a,
savers.
They don't have a, they're not. They're not flying any sort of private jet.
Yeah, they're probably not even flying first class.
No, and they go on vacation. They're not staying at the Ritz-Carlton, and if they do, it's once in a lifetime thing or whatever, right? So that's why they have the few $1 million set aside.
So if
there's
they
a
save
lot of those people,
$4 million.
Well, if you listen right now in the political environment of the kind of tax that they want to. All these presidential contenders that are out there right now.
Yes.
70% tax rate.
Tax the rich.
A wealth tax.
Tax the rich. Why do you tax the rich, Scott?
They have the money.
That's exactly it. You tax the poor, not going to get a lot.
It's a minority of people who pay tax on Social Security, their Social Security income, but it's those with the higher income at retirement.
So... we've seen this happen in the state of California where the voters voted to increase the taxes on the rich.
Correct. Yes, they did.
A couple times.
Twice.
One time it was under the guise of mental health.
1%. That's why there's no more homeless in California.
Yeah, perfectly taken care of.
Yeah, worked out great.
Perfect. And then the other time was just like, yeah, we're not even going to disguise this. You're just going to tax the rich. And the voters voted for it.
Yeah.
So there will be...
that's why California is the highest.
So that's
income
my
tax
point, Scott. So the Social Security, they're going to bring it. If I was running on a Democratic ticket, which I'm not,
you're not running.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, and
I couldn't see you being a politician.
I'm a little bit more of a libertarian than anything else, but I would be. This is an issue I would be holding up front and center. It's taxation of the rich and Social Security.
Well, that's why you wouldn't get elected, too.
Okay. All right. You got me there.
Social Security is going to be bust sometime between 2030 and 2034.
At the current structure.
Yeah. So I don't think anything's going to change for several years on it. And we've talked about this maybe too much.
Yeah.
But anyway, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Oakland, California with Barry. Barry, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call.
Thank you, Barry.
I just had a quick question about, I'm wondering what your opinion on the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index versus Fidelity's 500 Index.
Oh, they're two different animals.
Well, and see, that's what I'm not understanding. And I want to know if they were comparable because everybody always talks about Vanguard's total stock market. And I have the option of either. But there is a slight charge on Vanguard, so I was just wanting your opinion.
On buying it?
What's the difference? Yeah.
Okay, so here's...
you just said total different animals, and I didn't realize.
No, they're not completely. They're 75% identical.
Okay.
so here's...
yeah, but it's a different animal.
Okay.
So, Scott, the reality is it's a completely different animal. It's got components that are the same, but you and I wouldn't use those terms interchangeably, the total market versus the S&P 500. So what's the difference?
Okay, so we'll get and then you can decide, Barry, if there's more similarities or totally different animals. So,
okay.
So
okay.
First of all, we're talking about index funds, which are not actively managed, right? So with an index fund... basically, you're saying, you know, instead of trying to pay someone to outsmart the market, I don't believe they can. Let me just try to buy the basket of stocks, realizing that if I do that, I'm going to have some that are going to become tomorrow's Amazons, Googles, and Apples. And I'm going to have some that are going to be...
the Sears.
It's just the nature of things.
General Electric, yeah. PG&E.
And I remember years ago, I used to personally own this. It was a small cap international fund. And I owned it, and I kept it. And the reason I owned it, I enjoyed their annual reports because they'd list their top 10 performers, and they all were huge performers, you know, 10 times growth, all that. And then they'd list their bottom 10 performers, bankrupt, down 99%, et cetera. And I realized it was the same people doing the research and due diligence and all that picked the top 10 winners as picked the top
the bottom 10 that went bankrupt.
Right? Which is an argument for passive or index investing.
Exactly. So an S&P 500 is essentially, not exactly, but essentially the 500 largest companies, publicly traded companies in the United States. And Standard & Poor's is a company that they're the ones who puts the index together. They say this is what's in our list of 500. There's a certain criteria, and sometimes every once in a while they'll say you're no longer in, but now you're in
and
the club.
And it's capital. It's capitalization weighted.
So in other words, you don't own 1/500th of each company. If Apple is 50 times larger than the bottom company, then you'll have your money is essentially 50 times more in Apple than somewhere else.
As a side note, the Dow is not capital weighted. It is equally weighted. So it is the Dow Jones average is a less of a reflection of the true of what's truly happening in the stock market than the S&P 500.
A total stock market is roughly the largest 5,000 companies. It's 75% of the
about 75% of
the S&P 500,
and then it's about
15 to 18% of mid-cap, medium-sized companies. And then 8 to 10% in small cap,
which is the remainder. So, the S&P 500, the Fidelity S&P 500 that you were talking about, is included in the Vanguard total market, but only 75%. Now, if I had a choice,
if those were your only two options,
mm-hmm. I would buy the total market.
It's going to be slightly more volatile.
It's going to move around more.
But just a little bit.
It's going to give you representation in mid and small company stocks, which have historically outperformed large company stocks on the indexes.
Gotcha.
And that's why we did. Okay. Now, what is you said
now,
that there's
but here's what's been going on in the industry. So Vanguard was one of the pioneers of it. John Bogle created Vanguard. Incidentally, the index was kind of a mistake because. Which people don't know about this, which is kind of interesting.
But he told the story, did he not?
Yeah, I heard the story. And unfortunately, he passed away recently, so I'm telling the story. But he worked for Wellington, had a disagreement, left, and he had a non-compete. His non-compete said he couldn't actively manage, he couldn't be an investment manager. So he created Vanguard. Then he argued that we're not investment managers because all we do is index, so we're not managing anything.
They're just buying the index, which is actually pretty brilliant.
Yeah, that's what he did to get around his non-compete.
So what are they charging you to buy the Vanguard Total Market versus the Fidelity S&P 500?
It's very minimal, like $75, so it's not
one time?
Yeah.
And $75. So you have this money in – so you have it at a Fidelity account.
You're correct.
That's why they're charging it, because they're not getting a platform fee or there's another.
Is that a 401k?
No.
Yes. Well, no, IRA.
Yeah, it's an IRA at a custodian at Fidelity. So I would ask the question.
How about Fidelity's total stock
market?
Okay, that makes sense.
They'll have one.
Yeah.
All the big firms now, they all have their own suite of
but let's answer
funds.
The question, then let's take it one down one more step, Scott. You'd have to actually look at the size of your account, the cost difference between the Fidelity and the Vanguard, and then figure out how long you thought you were going to own it and whether you're better off paying the $75 one-time charge.
Or moving to somewhere that's not going to charge you the $75 one-time charge.
Like the Vanguard.
But most of them now, there's a race to zero and they're all getting so close. So our firm, we use a lot of index funds, and our clients, we have our clients' money at places like Charles Schwab, Fidelity, TD Ameritrade, right? And let's just, if we have somebody who's got their account at TD Ameritrade, we might use one of their low-cost index funds. And at Charles Schwab, we might use one of their lower cost index funds. Because to us, I don't care. They're not actively managed. I can care less than
anyone. It's all the same.
I just want the lowest cost.
So my guess is that you're best off just buying the Fidelity Total Market and not worrying about it.
Okay.
How much money are you talking about? Unless you're talking about millions of dollars, how much money are you talking about?
One of those. One. Mm-hmm.
$1 million.
Mm-hmm.
I'd look at the basis points.
I would too.
At $1 million. So what you want to do is calculate what the internal cost of each one of the Fidelity.
But then again, if I always had $1 million invested, I don't think I'd buy the total stock market index. I'd use the S&P 500 and buy some other. Well, we don't know as the rest of his portfolio.
Yeah, we don't. So what I think you should do, Barry, is actually figure out if I took $1 million and put it in each one of these funds, the Fidelity Total Market versus the Vanguard Total Market, and looked at the overall dollar expense inside of those, and
figure out which can be the cheapest for you.
Which one's going to be the cheapest for you? You may be better off paying the $75. You may not.
Yeah. Or moving it to a custodian that's not going to charge it.
All righty.
Right, Vanguard or whatever. Okay. Yeah, one quick question on backdoor IRAs.
Yeah.
Yep.
I hear you guys talk about them all the time, and I've been doing them, but I'm under the understanding if you have a rollover IRA that you can't do the Roth because the account's tax deferred, and it would be a percentage of that overall balance.
It's not that's correct. So it's not that you can't do a non-deductible. It's that this strategy doesn't really work because you have to include all of your IRA balances.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
That's the problem.
All right, guys. Hey, I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, all right.
Thanks for calling, Barry.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't use the total stock market index much for our clients because we build
other
S&P 500, and then we can build the allocations around it. But they're perfect for smaller accounts.
I don't know if I'd – but that's
not a small account. I wouldn't necessarily use the approach that he's using.
But that wasn't the question he asked us.
That is correct. And
he didn't ask us our opinion on whether it was right or wrong for him. He just asked us
– That is correct.
And the pricing.
So we answered the question.
There we go.
Hopefully educated him a bit. Anyway, we're out of time. We are here every week at this same time. And if you haven't been to HansenMcLane.com in a while, do so. We've got some great resource there. We've got a newsletter we send out each week. And you'll be glad you spent some time on that. And we will see you next week. This has been Hanson McLane's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLane Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
Scott Hansen here, and I have some exciting news to share, Sacramento. Hanson McLane is changing its name to Allworth Financial. Why? Well, modern retirement has gotten much more complex. I mean, from taxes to estate planning, even the social transition, we decided we needed a name to reflect how we help you plan for all of it. But rest assured, I mean, we're still going to provide advice that's in your best interest, just like we have done for the last 26 years. So to learn more about our name change to Allworth Financial starting April 29th, visit HansenMcLane.com/Allworth.